part three of seeing light in tragedy. So when all the dust settles, or sometimes when not all the dust is yet settled, while people are still in the middle of it, so all of a sudden you'll start hearing people try to figure out, attribute flame of certain things. This question for me started, I remember it was, I think, during the Intifada, during the 2001 or so. I forget the year exactly. Somebody in Eretz Yisrael wrote something in the newspaper that was making its way into America, where he wrote that, I forget the details, I had a copy of it and I couldn't find it. So something to the extent of that the Arabs are successful in certain things. They have certain characteristics that they have that the Jews are not necessarily doing so great on. One is their ability to pray in public, that Jews sometimes feel awkward praying, and they seem to have a lot of kavana when they pray. And the other one is the modesty of women. The modesty of the Arab woman seems to be much greater than the Jewish woman. Perhaps that's why they're being somewhat successful in their attack against the Jewish people. So that, somebody wrote that in a paper, somebody said that, I remember at Shira, I was at Yeshiva University, and someone said that in my shul. They had actually a panel of rabbis in my shul, and one of the other rabbis in the community, not the one of my shul, not Rabbi Krauss, again, said that as well. And that led to a big problem. Led to a big fight over the course of that evening. And that led me to one, I can understand why we might not be so happy with that. On the other hand, well, don't we do attribute things in Judaism. We talk about this entire time. This period is what we're going to hear many, many times. Sina Schinam destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and other things destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, and we have various recordings throughout our history, A, in the Talmud, and B, I couldn't track it down today. Here's page one, here is page two. I also couldn't track this down. Actually, I'm not sure I've actually ever seen this inside, other than on the doors to a shul. That there is, after the Kamelitsky massacres in the 1600s, the Gezeiros Tachtatat, Kamelitsky came from I think Eastern Europe and killed some place in the estimate between 400,000 and 500,000 Jews in a 2-year period in Europe. And that was, and people, from what I understand, for about 200 years following, people would say the word Chmielnytskyi in the way that we say the word Hitler, with utter disgust. And the Taz, the Terizav, was one of the Pirushim on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. And it was a big question, because the Jews are wondering, well, what could have brought this upon ourselves? Supposedly, there were 95% from. I mean, Europe was mostly religious. They were totally cut off from the non-Jews. The community seemed to be functioning somewhat properly. And people had a question, well, what brought this upon us? And the Taz supposedly wrote, again, I've never seen this except for one place where I'll tell you shortly, the Taz wrote that it's because people talk in shul too much. And that is what brought upon this discussion. Taz is a pretty serious character. The one place that I saw this, I heard it, and then I actually saw it inside once on the wall of a door to a shul. Not just the wall to the door of any shul, but it was actually a Sephardic shul. And the Sephardic shul said that, quoted this Taz, it says this Taz brought destruction upon European Jewry, and we know that they've always had, the European Jewry always had this destruction, and again, this is a Sephardic shul saying, we've never, and now we've started to fall and prey to the same thing of talking in shul, let's make sure we don't take upon, we don't act like the Ashkenazim do. That's what this wall of the, let's make sure we don't act like the Ashkenazim, let's make sure we don't talk like shul, therefore tragedy shouldn't befall our community. That was on the door to this Sephardic shul and my cousins live next door to my cousin's house in Rosh Hashim, actually not so far from where the Levengers are, right outside of Haifa. So I'm not sure what we do with that. So Rabbi Emanuel Feldman famously wrote in his Introduction to Tradition. Rabbi Emanuel Feldman was the editor of the Tradition Journal for many years, and he always had the tradition is the editor has to write about a 5 to 10 page thing for every journal. So in spring of 2007, he's commenting on the catastrophic event of the previous summer, which was Hurricane Katrina. And if you actually take a look, if you Google causes of Hurricane Katrina, so you'll causes of destruction of Hurricane Katrina, so you'll see several on the Wikipedia page. You'll have several things about, you know, there was a lot of wind and a lot of rain and a lot of whatever, and the U.S. Army Corps failed and they weren't properly prepared and blah blah blah. And on the list of things is Rav Avadya Yosef actually could, I think it was him, I'm not sure, actually attributed this to the fact that New Orleans is perhaps might not be the best place for Orthodox Jews to visit based on various things that happened in New Orleans. And that was a couple of, I think there was two things from rabbis saying it like that, saying that the reason why this happened in New Orleans is because of X. So Rabbi Feldman, in a way, in his introduction, very acutely dismisses this. He has this little conversation he has, I can't read very well, is New Orleans destroyed? Why is New Orleans destroyed? So this is because the Big Easy, where there was no self-control and everything goes, was philosophy of life. So God unleashed a hurricane that was out of control, and the Big Easy became a big uneasy. It was clear case of measure for measure. So if so, why was New York City, which is probably as licentious as New Orleans, not destroyed? So the answer is simple. New York contains yeshiva, and the merit New York wasn't destroyed. But why was New Orleans destroyed and Houston spared only a few weeks later? So New Orleans and Mardi Gras and are redolent of idol worship. I mean, New Orleans is much worse than Houston. So did Katrina create refugees? Yeah, the reason for that is clear. God was wreaking vengeance against the U.S. because it pressured Israel to evacuate Gaza, which created a lot of refugees. And if so, why did New Orleans get punished and not Washington? Oh, that's because, see above. Right? So next, does a bridge give way during the Israeli Olympics crippling a number of athletes? That's something else that was going on then. Oh, that's because we did not trouble to create bridges between themselves and the Creator. Does a dance for collapse in the midst of Jerusalem wedding killing and maiming those of a few moments earlier filled with the highest of joy? Clearly, this is because the presence of God was not sufficiently stressed in their celebration. Does a school bus crash in Israel killing and injuring many children? Oh, that's because the parents didn't leave the mezuzahs inspected, didn't have their mezuzahs inspected properly. And then our 10,000 residents forcibly expelled from their homes in Gaza and their synagogues and cemeteries uprooted? Says, yeah, well, they had to come to them because they did not participate in the Jerusalem protests against the desecration of the ancient Jerusalem graves. And also because they made a fetish out of the love of the land of Israel above all else. Yes, they did study Torah, and yes, they did observe mitzvahs, but they were probably not sincere enough in their service to God. But if they deserved their punishment, why did God punish? So if they deserved that, meaning if they deserved to be kicked out of Gaza, why did God punish the United States, right, if he wanted the settlers to be punished? Well, I admit that occasionally we don't have all the answers. And then he goes on to spend another 10 pages.
So this is not tongue-in-cheek.
This was tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, sorry.
All of these things. So clearly, well, I don't quite understand. So it's all tongue-in-cheek. He goes on to spend another 8 to 10 pages. You could find it through this also is password protected. I could get you a copy. Of where he goes on, part of it is mentioned later on, where he goes on to list many, many sources to say that we really don't know, and that there's really, and that how dare you ask, and we'll cover some of those sources shortly. However, this is in opposition. We see that this does come up, and I'll give one example on the page here, which is a 3-page ad or article, it's unclear, that was printed by Rav Shach. You see the Ted Nem on December 29th, 1990. And it's somewhat of a sensitive one. It took a little bit of time to try. I read it. I remember reading it in English when I was in yeshiva about 15 years ago while sick in bed. I remember just reading it, like an English book of Rav Shach's letters. And this is one of them, and I was able to track it down. I wasn't able to track down the English, but I tracked down the Hebrew. This was, if you recall, December 29th, 1990. It was a pretty intense time in Israel, right? It was about 2.5 weeks before January 15th, 1991, which was the deadline, the UN force deadline that Iraq better get out of Kuwait, otherwise they're going to step up and we have military activity against Iraq. And Israel was very scared. Israel was nervous of course, Iraq a threat, that if there's any military action against Iraq, we're going to send missiles into Israel. And Israel, of course, was told by the United States not to defend themselves, because if you defend themselves, they're going to lose the whole coalition, and it's going to be a whole big problem. So Israel basically had their hands tied and was basically waiting for missiles to come, which they ultimately did come. And Rashach writes, and it's challenging, and it's a question, and I'm not willing to dismiss it, and hopefully we'll work out what he means and how we take this. And he asks, Hasha'ela hanitzeves lefaneinu, the question that's raised in front of us, that we lost 6 million of our brothers. Ein mishpacha shelo savalas mehashoah im horim o achim, tzitzayim v'stam krovim, kulam nifku mehashoah hanora shenigzara alameinu. There's nobody that doesn't have parents or brothers or relatives or friends that were lost in the Holocaust. Halu davar hu anu lo ne'etzarim lerega lishol madua zekara, that it's something that how could we not ask, why would this happen? How could we say that God acts with evil or cruelty, really, as Achzarios? Right? If a God is merciful, why would he do this to us? Right? I think that says, Hayida b'chinam, was this just happenstance, was a coincidence? Hayimish b'kochu shel basfer dam para adam Hitler, Yimach Shemo, how could there be somebody who is so evil? Lahashmit Shisha Million Yehudim. Imanu Savurim Kach, Lekavim Anu Bemuna Behashkacha Bori Olam Al Barav. How could that happen if we believe that God controls the world? Anu Shoel, Heich Viketzat Sarak Yehudi, Lashuv Lanu Koach Shoah Noris Kazu, Bevadai Sheish Cheshbon Lecholze. Right, how does a Jew deal with this? There certainly must be a Cheshbon for all this. Harimeos Hashanim Lokara Mikra Kazemi Ashoah Hanor Hazu. There has never been anything like this. So Baruhu, so he responds by, and then he comes with this answer, Baruhu Shatshuva Brurad Mo'od, it's very clear. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu nihal cheshbon echad le'echad, cheshbon aruch hamishtareya al pnei meos shanim. That God keeps a cheshbon, God keeps an account, ad sheitztabir lecheshbon shel shisha million Yehudim, until it reached a large amount. V'kach yisrachsha hashoah, and that's when the Shoah came. Kach tzarech Yehudi lahamin. That's what a Jew has to believe. Ima Yehudi lo shalem be'amunazu. If a Jew is not filled with this amunah, mean that it came for a reason, hu kofer be'ikr, then he's a kofer, he's a heretic. V'habir ha'pashut hu shezeh eitzah shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'zeh behechrach onesh. There was a punishment. V'im lo nekabel etzeh ka'onesh, harei ki'ilu she'anu lo ma'minim ba'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if we don't believe that it was a punishment, it's as if we don't believe in God. V'lachar shmaz ha'shisha million ma'svil cheshbon chadash im am Yisrael, and now that it's over, so we have a new cheshbon, we have a new account. Ein lanu musa klal al kama shanim yishtareya cheshbon zeh matay tismalei hasa im shana oshna sayim v'ulai esa shanim. He said, we don't know when the cheshbon is going to be up. It could be now, it could be in a year, it could be in 2 years, it could be 10 years. But the cheshbon is building up. And he goes on to say that it's because people aren't from. Right? And he blames the Holocaust, so to speak. At least that's the way the critic would say it. He blames the Holocaust on those that weren't from. So I don't think you could just dismiss that. I think you have to understand what he was talking about. And I understand that this is probably the extreme. Actually, this isn't the extreme. There's more extreme ways of taking the Holocaust that was expressed. But let's go through the sources and see how we understand both of these opinions. And where you have Feldman saying that don't bother doing anything. You have Rashach saying that, no, this is the reason. And you better shape up, otherwise it's going to happen again. So let's deal with that. So we've I think talked about this in week one. This the pasuk Vayomer ani avir kol tovi al panech v'krasi b'shem Hashem lefanech v'chanosi es asher Vayomer harini na es kvodecha. That Hashem says to Hashem.
Moshe
says, I'm sorry. Vayomer ani avir. Hashem
will
say. Right. Moshe is saying this to Hashem. So Moshe says, "Show me your glory." Hareini na esk vodecha. So Yomer lo sucha. So God responds, "Lo sucha liros es panai ki lo yareini adam b'chai achin v'rachamti sasher arachin." God says, "I can't show you my face." Because nobody will see it, then we'll be able to leave. Achin v'rachamti is hasher arachim. I will have mercy upon whom I will have mercy upon. So the Gemara tells us that Moshe was in fact asking this question. Bikesh lahudia drachav shal kodesh baruch hu. That Moshe wanted to know the ways of God. V'nasan lo shenemar. Show me your ways. Why is it that good things happen to the bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? Right? Why are there good things that have good things happen to them and good people that have bad things happen to them? Bad people that have good things happen to them and bad people that have bad things happen to them. Isn't there any order in the world? By the way, it's an interesting question. Maybe we'll save this. We will save this for another time. And I think we raised it 2 weeks ago. Why is it that, what does this have to do with the Chet Egel? Right? Moshe's response is, well, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I need to understand this. Why do you need to understand this? What does this ever have anything to do with the fact that the Jews just made a Chet Egel and worshipped it? Well, why is this the, whatever, another time. So Amar lo Moshe tzadik v'ra, so he says to him, Moshe tzadik v'tohu, tzadik v'tzadik, I'll tell you. It makes a lot of sense that a tzaddik who I'm good to is a tzaddik the son of a tzaddik, and a tzaddik v'ra'lo is a tzaddik ben Russia. Is a tzaddik the son of an evil person, huh? Russia v'tovo, Russia ben tzaddik, Russia v'ra'lo, Russia ben Russia. The same thing, that a Russia who I'm good to is really the Russia the son of a righteous person, Russia v'ra'lo, Russia ben Russia. So the Gemara has a problem with this, and the Gemara has a different suggestion that is pretty much equally as confusing, is probably the point. I mean, the point is Hashem is basically telling him, yes, there are reasons you're just not going to be able to understand it. Any reason that you're going to come up with, I'm going to be able to come up with, well, did you look at this? And did you look at the person's parent? And did you know about the other thing? Did you know about the other thing beyond that? So that gets into many of the other questions that we have. Well, what, did the person have free choice? What's the point of being, you know, if something's bad? Whatever. But I think the point of this Gemara, we could say it simply right now, is Hashem telling him, you're just not going to get it. And you're not going to be able to understand all the things that I'm doing to you. At the very end of Sefer Iyov, which is all about this question, Iyov is about, Iyov seems to be doing just fine, and God decides to test him. And God, there really isn't much of a reason, if simple pshat in the psukim is, that there really isn't much of a reason for God to test Iyov, other than the satan comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, you know, you think Iyov is such hot stuff, he's really not. And I bet you if you test him, you'll see that he's not. And that's what Hashem does. Hashem goes, simple explanation of the psukim is that Hashem then goes and afflicts Iyov for 40 prakim of Tanakh. Iyov is afflicted, and he's got, most of it is really not necessarily his afflictions, but his debates with his friends, and his friends go and try to console him, and on and off during this whole time, his friends are telling him, Iyov, there must have been something that you did. And at the very end, Perek Mem Beis is the very end of this, of Sefer Iyov. So Iyov declares that I understand nothing. Right, who is it that would deny your counsel without knowledge? That therefore I declare that I understand nothing, it's beyond me, I really have no idea. And by the way, the next pasuk is, Hashem says, good job, Iyov, so now you're off the hook, but your friends, who've been yelling at you for the last 40 pruk, and now I'm going to go start up with them. Right, they're the ones that deserve to be punished because they were constantly badgering you about this. So what? what do you mean? What's the issue there? So, and then one, and just two more sources on this idea of we don't know. Mishnah Pirkei Avos or Biyanai Omer in Biyadenu Lo Mashalos Harashayim Va'aflo Misorei Hatzadik Misorei Hatzadikim. We can't account for the tranquility of the wicked or the afflictions of the righteous. We just don't know. And the Rambam says basically, don't even bother to try to find out. Right? The Rambam. This is the Rambam, the rationalist. in the end of the Perish HaMishnayis in the Sefer Brachos, says, it says we don't, three lines about we don't really understand what's going on. It says, Lachin somuch al ha'ikar hazeh b'atutard atzmacha lachkor b'inyanzeh. He says, therefore rely on this idea that you don't really understand, this idea that he's quoting previously, darchei mi darcheichem machshavosai mi machshavoseichem, right? Your ways are not my ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts. Just understand that. Was all those people that even if they are of our emunah, they are of our belief, right? And they work on this, they're never going to understand it. That it's going to be left upon them that it's going to be like water and whatever. Some, I'm not sure what it means, but some kind of muscle of it's like looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You're just not going to get it. That is not going to happen. So that's sources 1 through 5, all pretty much saying that that's the meaning of Hashem telling Moshe that you just lo tuchal liros espanikol yurenia adam b'chai. Nobody sees me, and that will be able to live. So you, if you'd like to really understand, so you know, it just ain't going to happen in this world. Okay, so that's group number one. Number two is not only is it not make sense and don't bother and it's not going to be helpful to go into these things, but the Gemara even tells us that it's prohibited to go into these things. What kind of prohibition? So the Gemara tells us about Onas Dvarim. In the middle of Maseches Bava Metzi, it talks about the Isser of Onah. The Isser of Onah is the Isser of gaining too much overcharging or price gouging. To charge more than a sixth above market value. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to have a 1/6 markup. It means you're not allowed to have more than a 1/6 increase over everybody else or over market value. So like when remember when there was a big blackout in New York? Was there a blackout here also? Like the whole East Coast? The county here also a couple of years ago? At 5? At 6-7 years ago. No, was blackout covered here also?
It came into Pennsylvania, but not all the way.
Uh-huh. Okay. Not in the same. All right. Anyways, so I remember just on the news that they were talking about how like people were charging like $8 for a bottle of water when people were walking home. So right, that would be an isser of onas mamon. What about onas devarim? So it says, what's onas devarim? Making fun of people. Onas devarim hakesad. Source number 6. Im hayah bal tshuva. If a person is a bal tshuva, al yomer lo zocher maasech harishonim. So don't say to him, remember what you used to do. Im hayah ben gevim. If a person is a son of converts, al yomer lo zocher. Don't tell him, remember what your father's in Meyagir, Ubaldo Motora, Yomer Lo Pesh Achleveus, Trevo Shkatsever Mussin, Baldo Motora, right? It's not proper to say to him, you who ate pork, right? You're going to learn Torah, right? How could that, right? Don't do that. That's bad, okay? All right? If you learned anything tonight, learn that, all right? That's not a good thing to do. Imayu Yisurin Ban, 11, then it adds in, if pain comes upon somebody. Uim hayu chalayin bayin alav, or if disease comes upon him. Oshahayim mekaver es banav, or if Nebuch he has to bury his children. So al yomer lo kederach shamu lo chaver of Eov. Don't say like the friends of Eov said to Eov, hayoresi kisilscha takusecha v'tamderach. Do you recall anyone who was innocent that has ever lost without a trace? Meaning the friends of Eo said to him, do you think anybody, did things like this ever happen to somebody who was innocent? Right? So that's not the right thing to say. That's what our Gemara is saying. Right? If somebody is going through suffering, don't go and say, well, it must be because you did something. Right? All indicating not to do something. However, as you'd guess, there are a few Gemaras on the other side as well. The Gemara tells us in Brachos, source number 7. So, Amar Rava Vitemer of Chista. Now, this Gemara is important to know the context. The context is that of godless of Talmud Torah. That's what the Gemara is talking about. So he has a couple of Gemaras about how important it is to learn Torah and how terrible it is to be Mevatel Torah. So Amar Rav Avi Tema Rav Chista Imroa Adam Sheisurin Bainal, if a person sees that he's being pained, so Yifashish Ramaisav, it's proper for a person to look at what they've been doing, as the Pasuk says, Nach Vesad Archeinud V'Nachkor V'Nashuva An Hashem. Look into the ways that you're doing, and then you'll return to Hashem. So pishpish v'lo matzah. So let's say you look into everything, and everything seems to be doing okay, right? You don't even talk in shul, right? You everything is totally fine. So then what do you do? So it says pishpish v'lo matzah yitla b'vitol Torah. So it must be that the reason is bitol Torah. Ashrei hagever sheti esrinu yom yitorah schat talam denu. Right? How great is a person that. That has afflictions, I guess, with the Asrinu, yeah, that God afflicts, and they shall learn Torah. The answer would be to learn Torah. So v'im tala v'lo matzah, so he says that if he said, oh, you're right, he looked into it and tried to figure, well, have I actually been mevatel Torah? And he said, no, I'm not mevatel Torah, I learned plenty of Torah. So b'yadua she yisurim shel avahim, so you know that they are what we call yisurim shel avah. Shneemar, right? He says, "Sure, Yehovah Hashem Yuchiyah." That which Hashem loves, so that is the one that He punished. So, what Yisurim Shel Ava are could have been what we would have talked about tonight, and perhaps might have discussed the answer to the question. But we're not going to go there. But it's some kind of. You're right. That maybe there is no reason. That's perhaps it. If everything else fails, so then there is no reason. So the reason I'm not talking about it is A, it's difficult to understand, and B, I'm not sure it really applies to us. Right? So that's the answer to all of our questions. I mean, somebody says, well, how could this have happened to me? Why is this tragedy happened to me? Well, I don't think for our community we really get past step one and two in order to get to step three. at least me personally, we have plenty to be tola on before we get to Bittul Torah, and we have plenty to be tola on within Bittul Torah, right? I don't think we have to get to the Yisurin Shel Ava in order to understand that. So that's what the Gemara is clearly saying here, though, is that if something happens to you, so there's a reason. Right? Try to figure out a reason. It's only if you can't find a reason that you could go on, well, it's Yisurin Shel Ava, I don't have to worry about it. Maybe I do have to worry about it, but I don't have to worry about it, right? First, you got to look, though. First, you got to seem to... the first thing you have to do is try to claim causality. You try to do that first. There is a Gemara I saw today, quoted from the Nefesh HaChaim, not the Nefesh HaChaim, the Ruach HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's Perish on Pirkei Avos, where he quotes this Gemara and says, why is it that the second thing you look at is Bittul Torah? Because the whole Gemara is talking about how grave it is to be Mevatel Torah. Right? It's Gemara after Gemara, Gemara. Don't waste any time from Torah. Don't waste any time from Torah. So now, if the Gemara has gotten us into a framework of, it's so terrible to be Mevatel Torah, wouldn't he have found Bittul Torah when he first was analyzing, when he first did a Cheshbon HaNefesh? I mean, why is it that Bittul Torah was left out of his Cheshbon HaNefesh, that was left out of his personal accounting, that he's only going to go ahead and find it later? Right? That we have a second command, oh, go look there. Shouldn't he have found it in the first place? So Ruach HaChaim explains, he says, no. What does it mean, Bittul Torah? The problem is you don't know enough Torah. Right? That if you actually would learn more, so then you would recognize the issues that you had in the first place. Right? You're not going to find Bittul Torah in the first place. It's only once you go back and revamp your Talmud Torah and re-up your Talmud Torah, well, perhaps then you have a chance of finding things earlier. That's what he claims. But anyways, from this Gemara, it clearly says that the Yifash Beish V'Maisav. Please look at your Maisav. Yes.
The problem for us is the opposite. There are so many things we could attribute to.
We'll mention that. Okay, the second Gemara that we actually have this in a conversation on the second side of that page. It's not really discussing Bittul Torah anymore, but it's the second side of Hey Amid Beis of Maseches Brachos. Rav Huna Takifu Lei Arva Mea Dani Dechamra. That it happened to Rav Huna that he 400 barrels of wine turned into vinegar. Right? So a bad thing happened to him. So V'amru, so his Talmidim came and visited him and to console him. He was very upset. And V'amru Lei La'ayin Mar B'milei. They said to him, have you looked into your actions? So Amar Lo, he said back to him, Umi chashinna beinaichu. He says, well, does anybody here have any ideas? Has anybody here maybe seen one of my faults? So Amru Le, they said to him, Michashid kudsha brichu. I'm sorry. So Amar Lo, they said to him, So they said back to him, well, does God do any din that's not a din? I mean, does he do anything that's unfair? Meaning, it's almost like they asked the same question that Yehov's friends asked. Right? But here it's approved. So Rav Huna says to him, says, well, if anybody here has any complaints against me, so speak up. I want to hear it. So Amrule, they said to him, so they said, well, we kind of perceive that you're not really leaving enough money for your sharecropper. So the Gemara actually then goes on to this whole story to say, well, he comes back to them and says, well, there's a reason for that. It's because he stole a lot of money from me. So whatever. The Gemara goes on and gives a whole story about why he's not doing it. But we see the Talmidim, A, say to him, maybe you should take a look at what you're doing. Right? It can't be that this just happened out of happenstance. And they even go so far as to suggest a reason as to why it's going bad. So which one is it? Do you have a right to do it, or do you not have a right to do it?
It sounds like you don't have a right to do it to other people.
It sounds like you're
okay to do it for yourself. Oh, what did I do wrong? Maybe I should examine my actions, but you're not allowed to say, what did you do wrong? What do you think you did? It's almost like an avera.
But that's what they did here.
No, right.
Wrong, but that's what I'm saying.
But the Gemara seems to assume the Talmidim are right. The Gemara takes the Talmidim as a good paradigm, but I think you're still right. I think you're correct. I think that distinction is the
accusing another person of something or judging or
right. I think the correct distinction is that most of the Gemara that we were talking about was A, either finding out the reason. I mean, Moshe wants to know the reason. I want to know what is going on. Right? And almost in a way of saying, you owe it to me to tell me what's going on here. Right? And that, those first five sources are all about, if you want to know why, you want to know the one reason why this happened, so you're not, A, you're not going to know, and B, it's not worth it to find out. Right? And don't bother finding out. It may be worth it to find out, but it's not, don't bother to find out. That's none of your business, God says. Right, so that's issue number one. Issues 1 through 5 are, right, if you want to know the reason, it's not going to happen because you're just not going to get it. You're human, you're not God. Source number 6 is somebody's punished or they're going through a difficult time, and it's like, you know, lady in the back of the shiva call saying, you know, it may be the reason, I can imagine that sort of thing, I think it might be because something happened, you know, you did this or you did that, right? And that's a problem. Why? Because it seems like it's uncalled for, right? You know, a person's doing these things, so don't say, right, something must have happened to you, you must have done something wrong, right? To say to the person, while they're doing it, well, it must be, you know, it's because you did something wrong, so that's what they call onas devarim. That's what we call, that's bad. That's what they're not supposed to do. To assume blame, to say it's your fault for this, that, and the other thing, that's a problem. And that's the Hurricane Katrina business. Right? That's the...
more destructive to do it, you know, like Rav Shach, you know, because you did X, Y, and Z, and this is what happened.
So hold on with Rav Shach. We'll defend him.
All right. This second answer that you're talking about, is that the one? Because I'm a little confused. Is that the one that is the Holocaust reason? You know, that the people were different.
Right. So if the answer is, if that's your reaction, basically what I just read. But the part that I read is why did it happen? It happened because people are not from. And it happened because of the reasons that some of the reasons that he gives.
People were from.
So
There were a lot of
people. He says, man, people weren't. He says,
there were four.
This is the other thing. Well, I understand that's a personal. I understand the personal part of it. Let's just understand what he's saying. I do want to say it's their fault because this. It happened to New Orleans because they did X, or it happened to the United States because they did something, and therefore I can absolve myself of my responsibility because it's their fault because they did something. Right? So that's what we're saying is not allowed. What's going on in these Gemaras and Brachos are, well, if something bad happens to you, it's your responsibility to look upon it upon yourself. Or the story with Rav Huna, right? So he says to them, "Nu, is anybody seeing a problem?" I mean, he's being inquisitive about it. He's asking about it. Now, too, there is a little bit of a problem there because the first person to say anything was his Talmidim. Right? The Talmidim were the ones that started the conversation. My answer to that is that there's whenever you're like when a Talmud pays a Shiva call to his Rebbe, I had this experience 2 months ago. Right? You, in a way, you have two agendas when you do that Shiva call. One agenda is you want to pay a Shiva call because somebody you're close to and consult, etc. You kind of have in the back of your head, I want to see how this person observes Shiva. Right? I want to learn and for myself. So these Talmidim, in a way, are going to the Rebbe and saying, this is my defense of them, saying, like, we want to get into your head, Rebbe. What are you going through? Are you going through, I mean, this is on Hey Amid Beis. On Brachos Hey Amid Aleph, we learned that you're supposed to be Yifashi from Maisav. Rebbe, are you going through that? No pressure. We're just wondering, where, like, is that part of your actions? And then the conversation ensues. I'm not sure they're accusing him of something at that point. It might just be, like, putting it on the agenda, which might not be so bad. So I think that's a key distinction.
What do you need to do that at the time, at that particular time when he's in pain? Maybe that would be something for a month from now, or something.
Yeah.
To do it at the time, just like with Eo, they do it at the time.
Right. So that far in that Gemara, I think we could claim cultural distinctions and era distinctions and stuff. I think the point though is that he's asking them for assistance. Yes.
You would assume that someone like Rav Huna would be doing that anyway, because that's what.
Right. Right. They're getting into this head.
They would not assume it was rampant.
Right. Right. And I think this is what the Shah of the Rambam is. I've quoted this Rambam before. It's a very important Rambam. The Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchos Tainus, for the first Halacha Aleph is that one has to, when bad things happen, you have to call out a daven, etc. And he says, V'davar zen, Halacha Beis, V'davar zen midarchi atshuvahu, shevizman shetavot tzorah v'yizaku aleh v'yariyu yodei hakol sheviglal ma'aseyem harayim hora lahen. That when people call out and when they cry out, they know that's because of their maisim that these things happened. And this is what's going to allow them to remove the yisurim from themselves. Right? If they don't call out, they don't scream. And they just say that, oh, well, that's the way the world turns, right? Minoga olam. Right, v'tsarazu nikra nikris, and this tsar is just a coincidence. Harezu derech achzarius, right? This is the way of achzarius means cruelty. V'garos lem lidavik maaseim arayim, that causes them to stick with their bad behavior. V'tosif tsarat tsaras acheres, and adds on other tsaros. So I think if you look carefully at what the Rambam is saying what we have just expressed, right? That when bad things happen, and so you have a responsibility to call out, cry and daven, etc. That crying and davening leads you to look at your actions, and you have to look and see, what do I have to do better? Right? And so just say, well, it's happening to them. That's none of your business what's happening to them. The only way that it's your business what's happening to them, if you're willing to take upon yourself some amount of responsibility to be involved with the fixing of it. Right? And by the way, the Rambam says, HaRezu Derech Achzarius. What do you mean it's the way of cruelty? So the way this also gets to this whole three-part thing that we've been talking about. It's cruelty to just say it's coincidence. Why is it cruelty to say it's coincidence? Because then what was the point of anything? Right, what's the point? If there's no point, then there's no point. Then why should I suffer if there's no point to it? Right? So we're saying that, no, there is a point to it. Right? The way to come out of tragedy, the way to come out of difficult times is to figure out where are we going to go from here, right? Once you get past that original stage that we talked about in week one. But where are we going to go from here? How are we going to improve from this stage going forward? And that's the point of this. That's the point of this round. If you're willing to be involved, you're willing to take responsibility, then go ahead and attribute blame. I remember, listen, I tried finding this also. I couldn't find a shir from Rav Meir Tversky. Rav Meir Tversky, one of my he talked about this issue. I remember, and he made a comment in it. Is if let's say something bad happens to you, and you decide I got a strep throat. And as a result of my strep throat, it must have something to do with my mouth. I'm going to work on my not speaking Lashon Hara anymore. And I really need to be Lashon Hara. Now, really, when God gave you the strep throat, He didn't have in mind your Lashon Hara. God had in mind that, well, you don't have enough kavanah when you daven. Really, you should be working on your davening, right? So meanwhile, I'm working on my Lashon Hara, and meanwhile, I'm not working on my kavanah and davening, right? So am I missing the point? So that's his first says. So did you get it wrong then? Right, you didn't get it wrong. Right, the point of difficult things that come upon us is to learn from them, is to improve from them. So let's say we do the wrong improvement. So the point is still being gained. The point is still being made, and you're still very much in fulfillment of this Rambam. So when you go to that article from Rav Shach, it's a 3-page thing. It's difficult, but there's really two ways to read it. Number one way of reading it is as we read it, the cynical way of, you see, it's their fault, and think about it, they're going to cause us. I mean, he's talking 3 weeks before Israel's about to be attacked by missiles, and he said they're going to cause us to have these problems again. That's way one of reading it. Or way two of reading it is, okay, so what are we going to do about it now, right? And if the call is, it happened then. What happened then? Well, it happened then. It wasn't just their fault. It was all of our faults. If he claims responsibility for what happened in the past and is willing to claim responsibility for what we're going to go ahead and do in the future, so then I think it's a lot more meaningful what he says. Because he's right. He's right to say that people say that we can't say that there is a reason that the Holocaust happened. So that the Rambam is saying that's achzorius, that's cruelty, and that means that the entire thing happened in vain. An entire generation of Jews was just wiped out for no reason. You can't say that. You can say that we don't know the reason. Probably you have to say we don't know the reason, and there has to be some humility in any suggestions that might be put forward. But to say that the whole thing happened and there's nothing to learn from it because the whole thing is just was God disappeared and there's no point. Right? That's achzorius. That's what we're saying. Cruelty is. If one wants, two more minutes. If one wants to take a look, the punchline of that Rabbi Feldman article, about 12 lines after the somewhat, what's the word I'm looking for? Tongue-in-cheek, a better word. But then the first line, he talks about, goes back to that pasuk that we mentioned in the beginning, of Hashem telling, Moshe saying to Hashem, please show me your way. And what does Hashem tell Moshe to do? Right? Hashem does show him something. Right? Hashem shows him his back. What does Hashem tell Moshe to do? He tells him to go someplace. Go into that cleft of the rock. Why is he telling him to go into the cleft of the rock? So he puts here, and you can read this, your inquiry into how I conduct my affairs cannot be addressed as long as you stand tall and erect and proud upon the mountaintop. Descend, lower yourself into the bedrock of existence, become as one with the material of which you have created, for a moment withdraw from your unique personhood, and then as a second stage in your comprehension of my essence, I will cover your eyes. For only as your eyes are covered so that you know that you do not perceive anything, only then will you be able to discern a hint of my blinding shadow as it passes by. Only down there in the cleft of the rock, in its bowels of the mountain, crouching, stooped, and bent over with your moral capacity to see impaired, can you be vouchsafed a fleeting glimpse of the mystery which is my essence. He says, to come from a place of arrogance and say, I understand, and say, I understand everything, that's what all these Gemara is saying you can't do. But from a place of humility and to say, there's a lot for me to gain, there's a lot for me to improve, a lot for me to learn. So that's where I think we're responsible to do it. So just the chazara on the three topics. Number one was, is everything for the best? So yes, we discussed yes and no, that maybe perhaps we don't perceive it, but if we perceive it later on, we should assume that later on we will have a perception, although we don't have a chazara to feel that way, right? So we have a choice in the matter, so we discussed that last week. And then finally, well, once we've gone through that, so who do we assign blame to? Are we able to assign blame? Where do we go from there in terms of looking back? So we go and try to find a way that we'd be able to improve ourselves from the past. Okay, so we'll stop here.